Bagworld is brought to you by headscape.co.uk, supported by getsignoff.com, and on this week's show we review Woopra, a Google Analytics alternative, and we explore why friendly URLs are so important and what tools are out there to help you set them up.
Hi Paul, how are you doing?
Hi Paul, how are you?
Hello Paul.
Hi Paul.
Hi Paul and Marcus.
Hello and welcome to the first ever Bagworld.com podcast.
Bagworld.
Hello, welcome to the 100th episode of Bagworld.
Hello, and welcome to the 117th episode of Bagworld.com. Podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis.
It's not on a daily basis, Paul.
I put it back in because I'm incapable of change. I've reached that age.
Yes, I'm an old boy now.
Cannot teach old dogs new tricks and
that's
all that.
The one.
So does this feel as slightly bizarre to you as it does to me?
I'm trying not to think about it.
We're sitting together in a bedroom.
A little hotel room
together.
It's the kind of hotel where I'm sure people rendezvous of an afternoon.
I'm getting a bit scared that Marcus might turn on some Barry White music in a minute.
No, there's nothing to play any music on. It's that kind of hotel. It's
where are we?
We're in Aberdeen.
Oh, yeah, somewhere foreign.
You can't say things like that.
I just have.
We're up with our Scottish brothers.
Yes. So yes, it's really exciting to be up here. No, it's not, is it? Am
I kidding? Well, it breaks up the week.
If we were doing a big Bagworld meetup or something like that, where there were lots of adoring fans telling me how great I am, then it would be exciting.
But Mike are nice blokes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the project. We're up here for work, which is fine. But, you know.
We thought we'd use our time wisely in Paul's bedroom. That sounds dodgy, doesn't it?
It sounds very dodgy. And Marcus is sitting, fiddling with his knobs on his little mixing desk. It's quite...
Got the baby mixing desk.
It's quite an inadequate mixing desk, isn't it, really?
Really,
if we're going
is.
For innuendos. It's very small and shrunken. But
stop now.
Okay, have I gone too far? Yes. I've overstepped the mark. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be rude about your mixing desk.
Not even mine.
So Marcus has dragged his mixing desk all the way up to Scotland. So don't you dare write in complaining about the quality of the audio.
This will probably be the best one ever, audio quality wise.
Probably, even though we're using the wrong mics and the wrong mixing desk. And Marcus is trying to use some fancy bit of software he doesn't really understand. So
Hey.
What's this bit of software called?
It's called Logic Pro.
And you bought it purely... Well, you bought the Mac purely for Logic Pro, didn't you?
No, I bought the Mac... Yeah.
Anyway, should we push on with the show?
Yeah, good idea.
So the first thing that I wanted to quickly mention, it is a plug. There's no other way of dressing it up. It is a plug, but I will only plug something on this show if you, dear listener, get something out of it. So hopefully you might be interested in this. So I'm speaking at a conference coming up called Fuel, and it's a new conference by the guys at Carsonified, and they're kind of taking a bit of a risk on this. It's not their normal fare, and so I wanted to kind of support them on it. And it's a one-day conference aimed at kind of entrepreneurs and marketing people who want to make their companies, services, and products truly remarkable. Bloody hell, it sounds like I'm reading
truly
stuff straight
remarkable.
Off the website.
What?
That's what it says on their website. It's not my fault. We've just copied and pasted. I blame Ryan, our producer. There we go.
Right, so Ryan at Castonified.
No, not Ryan.
You can
Ryan
blame him as well.
Well, let's blame him.
Anyone called Ryan.
Yeah, anybody called Ryan, it's all their fault. So the conference is on the 13th of June, so it's not long. I'm getting quite excited about this one, actually. Ticket costs £195, including VAT, which I know for you cheap-ass Bagworld listeners, is far too much, which is why I've managed to persuade them to get you 25%. No, not percent. Shit, I'm going to be in trouble now. £25 discount.
It's £2,500.
No, it's 195, I just said.
Oh,
were you
okay.
not paying attention?
Well, that's 12.5%.
So anyway, go along to the Fuel website, which you can get to via our show notes. Enter the promo code BOAGWORLD, B-O-A-G, world, and you'll get £25 off. I keep wanting to say percent. And it'd be really good to see you there. And perhaps we'll meet up for a drink or something. That'd be cool because there's an after-conference drinky poos. So.
Well, I've got a better idea for people for the after... The after conference.
Is there some cricket match on?
No. Stroke the Toad are playing live in Hartley Whitney at the Lamb on the 13th of June. The date just popped into my mind when you said it. So you should do the conference and then all come and see me play
is
the guitar.
Is your music on iTunes yet?
It is.
Oh, so Stroke the Toad, that is.
Stroke the Toad.
So what discount are you going to give Barrigal listeners?
Well, that'd be far too hard for me to work out how to do it. But hey, loads, whatever.
So anyway, there's two.
We'll buy you a drink if you come and see us. There you go.
That's far too many.
He's lost for words now.
I am. That's too much 13th commercialism.
Of June, what a fantastic date.
Too much commercialism for my liking. Okay, let's move on to the news.
World of Boag.
So we kick off our news with three stories that I've rolled together into one big story news mix.
Ooh.
How exciting does that sound? And I'm titling it, The Devil is in the Detail. I'm getting really good at this, aren't I?
Yeah, you're such a pro, Paul.
I'm a pro. So there's so much said about kind of design, usability, accessibility, other broad kind of subjects like that. But
with itty on the end.
They have to have itty on the end.
Right. Or illity, even.
Oh, shut up. but there's less written, and the posts that I really like are the posts that kind of are into the small things, the kind of details of web design, and that I think is what turns a
your
good
top 10 favorites for 2008, that kind of story.
No proper stories. The stuff that kind of turns a good site into an excellent site. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
That you can do good design relatively easy, but to kind of tip it over into excellent design is more difficult. So the first kind of one that falls into this category is a List Apart article that's just appeared called Zebra Striping. I have to be careful because I want to say stripping every time, and that's weird. Zebra striping, does it really help? So zebra striping refers to when you alternate colours on a table with data.
Of course it helps. Next news story.
Is that what you reckon?
I think it does.
Well, a lot of us use it and kind of presume that it does. It helps readability, doesn't it?
Separate outability.
Yes, something like that. This post actually takes the theory and puts it to the test. And the results are inconclusive. Right, so that was a good article there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But actually, it wasn't as good as you kind of first thought it would be. So that was quite interesting. But I haven't really got any more to say because basically the results were inconclusive. But it's an interesting read nonetheless and worth having a look at.
Well, yeah, it's interesting that they're inconclusive. I know that sounds kind of odd, but...
Yeah, so not as effective as you thought. So the second story is a new book that's just been released that I want to get my hands on. Please send me a free copy. It's called Web Form Design, and as the title suggests, it's looking at the really unrepresentative subject of creating great-looking, usable forms.
Okay, yeah.
It's interesting. It's the kind of book I like
it's
to go to
useful.
Bed with.
God.
Well, no, it's like web forms are really, really important. You think about it for a second, you sarcastic git. They're a crucial element of websites. Checkouts.
I didn't say they weren't.
Checkouts, registration, data input. Any task that requires completing inputting information.
Interaction data thing.
So they're really, really important.
Of course they are.
So don't yawn.
I won't yawn. Can I scoff?
You can scoff, that's fine. So it looks like, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, it looks like an excellent read. Shut up, Marcus. I hate having to come away on business trips here. And I highly recommend you check it out, because I will be. If I get my free copy. No, I might actually pay money for this one. So the final post that kind of falls into our detail, designers in the detail. No, devil's in the detail, that's it, is an article that looks at pagination. It's really, I guess, a kind of tutorial that explains how to code pagination semantically. And it demonstrates how you can then use that nice, clean, semantic HTML and apply some CSS on top of it to create pagination that looks like sites like Dig or, say, Flickr. And it's not a particularly advanced tutorial. It's ideal for beginners, really. So if you're kind of getting into standards and you want to know how to deal with pagination, then I really recommend that. Now, just to reiterate, those three links, so the zebra striping one at Alista Part is found at boagworld.com/links/117/1. Then the web form design book can be found at 2, and the pagination can be found at 3.
Have you had a great rave reviews about your new URL structure? Or the exact opposite, Paul.
So moving on to the next story. No, it's good. It's good. Now, people just didn't get it. I wasn't particularly clear last time.
I probably didn't help very much either.
No, you didn't. You were undermining it. So the next theme of the week, so to speak, in our news is reviews. In particular, Smashing Magazine have gone completely crazy now. They really have gone off the deep end in their lists of really useful things that you might want to check out. And they have created two what are excellent, if somewhat excessive, posts. The first reviews, get this, 35 useful code editors. Are there really that many? 35 they go through. Actually, I was quite interested in this because I've been using the same old code editor for years and years and years, and I keep thinking it's about time I had a look for something new. So having them all kind of nicely summarized for me in one place is quite good, really. Yeah. So I was quite keen on that. So 35 of the buggers. you can get to that. That's our fourth link in our news. So, I mean, of course, really, you should be writing code in just a text editor if you're hardcore. But some of us are more lazy than that and like advanced features like autocomplete formatting and debugging and stuff like that. So if you're interested in having a look at these code editors, then check them out on Smashing Magazine. Brilliant, if somewhat excessive, an article. So to follow up this somewhat excessive article, they have got the equivalent article for you, Marcus.
Oh, blimey. I'm awake again.
25 WYSIWYG editors.
Oh.
So this is our fifth link. I'm not going to bother explaining
it. WYSIWYG editors.
WYSIWYG editors.
Well, yeah.
So I guess this complements the previous post nicely. However, generally speaking, I would warn against Marcus using WYSIWYG editors. That said, they have their place for the stupid people in the world. They can be very useful, you know, people like clients that don't know.
Stop now. Next news story is...
No, they have their place. Clients find them useful and rightly so. Also, maybe if you're creating blog posts, and there are various occasions when a WYSIWYG editor has its place. So check out that list. Very good. Like I said, personally, I use Dreamweaver, and that's got a WYSIWYG element in it.
Of course it has.
I never use it, but it's there, and I'm not ashamed of it. Final news story, then. Yeah, I bet you use it.
Swiftly.
You're a usability person, not a code monkey.
Code person, no, certainly not.
So our final news story of the day is a post by Veal on her blog entitled, Does Flash Irk Me?, which I think is a good title.
Used to irk you.
It did. So this is our link number 6. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent opinion piece that is clearly laid out, and she expresses her feelings about Flash very well. She explains how she decides whether or not to use Flash and dispels some of the misconceptions about the technology. And I have to say, her post is obviously coming at a very timely manner since Flash has gone open source or open, you know,
thing.
Yeah, whatever it's done exactly. And it's very balanced, and her attitude is obviously is very close to my own. So obviously it must be right.
Well, nearly right if it's very close.
Yeah, obviously, yes, not exactly the same. So therefore there are mistakes in it. If you view Flash as the ultimate evil, or alternatively refuse to code in anything else, then read this post. It will provide you with a healthy dose of realism.
Cool. So
that's the news.
Right.
Do we sound like we're lacking a bit of enthusiasm today?
No, I don't know. You sound like you're a bit drunk, actually.
Do I really?
Yeah, it's like he's been at the wine while I've been hanging my suit up.
It's going on planes. Planes do that, don't they? They leave you a bit punch drunk.
Yeah. So let's move on, shall we?
Okay. Moving on to our feature, which is going to be friendly web addresses.
World of Boag. World of Boag.
Okay.
World
of Boag. So when redesigning the Boag World site, I spent quite a lot of time thinking about the URLs for each of the pages. And I went on, didn't I, last week about the new URLs.
Yeah, and ones and twos and threes and A's and B's and C's.
Yeah, well, not just that, but also the fact that it's /podcast now, /show number rather than, you know, all the rest of it.
Which is much better.
I haven't said that yet. You can get at the show notes at boagworld.com /podcast/... What number are we?
117.
117, thank you. So yeah, I spent quite a lot of time thinking about all that kind of stuff. And so I thought, well, why don't I explain a little bit of what I've done and why I've done it? So I think more and more website owners are beginning to realize that they kind of need to address the URLs, and that's kind of a crucial part of the design process. And friendlier web addresses, I think, as I was thinking about it, provide three benefits. Are you interested to know what those three benefits
are?
Go on,
tell me.
Number one, memorability.
Yep.
If that's even a word, which I'm not convinced it is. Number two, better navigation. You'll come on to that in a minute. Yeah. And number three, improved search engine placement.
Yep.
Okay, so you're confused by the second. We will come to that in just a moment. So understanding these benefits, which obviously Marcus doesn't fully yet, bless him. Although, interestingly, you wrote a report for a client that mirrors this.
This very client we're here to see.
Yeah, and it's very similar to what I'm about to talk about. So it's obviously your thing too. So understanding these benefits, I think, provides a small but significant advantage over your competition. So let's look at the first of those, memorability.
Yes, okay.
I really am sounding drunk now, aren't
I? You are, but carry on. It's good.
So for me, the major consideration was ensuring that web addresses were memorable. After all, you might be listening to this podcast sitting on a train or in your car or at the gym. No, let's be realistic. Not up from our
maybe
listeners.
Maybe one or two, but...
Yeah. And so I wanted web addresses that you could remember for when you went back. So... So, for example, the classic thing that I always used to say on the show is, to get to the show notes, go to boagworld.com/podcast, select show 114. Well, it's a bit harder to remember. And the reason I did that is because the actual URL was even worse than that. So, for example, show 114, the URL was www.boagworld.com/archives/2008/03/114_forum.html. So I wasn't going to read that out every week.
Well, you could, but...
Yeah, people aren't going to remember it when they get back.
Chance.
So the problem was is kind of almost always the same, to be honest. And even when we were like referring to third-party websites in the show, the URLs were just too hard to remember or to guess. And being able to guess a web address is really important. And that comes on to our second benefit, which is the one that you... I don't know what
this
you mean
quite
by
interesting.
That. Which is navigation.
Because I was looking up Aberdeen today on Google Maps.
Yeah.
I started dragging around this bit of Scotland.
Yeah.
It's full of golf courses.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, there's one a bit further up the coast. It's a sort of posh one called Royal Dornoch. And I thought, I'm going to go look at their website. This is relevant, honestly. And it's a dreadful website. And to the point that all the links are broken. You get to the homepage, all the links are broken. So I started guessing the URLs for the subpages.
There you go.
And got most of them.
Cool. See? So it does work. So what you did there is you used the URL as a form of navigation.
I did.
Because the normal form of navigation didn't work.
Correct.
There we go. You just proved my point. So the second point is the fact that it can provide better navigation. And a great example of this is Flickr. So if you want to see my photos on Flickr, you go to flickr.com/people/boagworld. Mm-hmm. Right? So once you've seen that web address, it's easy to guess the web address for other people. So, for example, you know, if I said, do you want to see Andy Budd's photographs? You know, it doesn't take a genius to work out that he would be, you know, /people/Andy Budd.
Yeah.
Unless he's chosen a weird username, which he hasn't. But, you know, that's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
But also the same then applies to things like tags. And so you begin to get into thinking in this way. So to see all of the photographs of me or that have been tagged of me, you'd go to flickr.com/photos, which might trick you, /tags/Paul Boag. And you'll get all the photos of me. So it's easy to kind of guess the format of the URLs.
And it's often quicker to do that than to actually kind of search and...
Exactly, and go through all the navigation. However, the addresses on Flickr actually do more than provide just navigation. They also give a context to your location within the site. So by looking at the address bar, You know not only where in the site you are, but the type of information you're viewing. Are you viewing a person or are you viewing a tag? You know, so actually the fact that they've got photos /tags makes sense because it's not a person, it's photos you're looking at.
Yeah.
So they really have kind of, you know, made it almost like, in effect, breadcrumbs in the URL. So it contains kind of valuable information about the page itself. And that in turn then explains why friendly URLs provide search engine rankings, because search engines are all about context and, and content. So
relevancy.
Exactly. A search engine doesn't really, you know, as it, we kind of all know that it doesn't really like database-driven sites with long query strings like, I don't know, boagworld.com/index.php :source ID = 1, you know, et cetera, et cetera. We've kind of known for a while that search engines don't like that, and I think everybody knows it. But they've never been rejected entirely by search engines. Certainly now they're not. And search engines will cope with dynamic sites, otherwise it wouldn't get a lot of the stuff on the internet. And things have moved on, and search engines do crawl them. However, they still place limits on those crawls. So they won't crawl forever and ever down those kind of those paths, because basically it could go into a recurring loop where it goes on and on and on. So generally, having URLs like that should be avoided. Worse still, the web address provides no keywords to help the search engine understand what the meaning of the page is. And this goes back to the Flickr example. There's no meaning, there's no semantics in the URL itself.
Yeah.
However, a semantically written web address, like the ones for, you know, for this article that I'm talking about now, boagworld.com/technology, because it's about a technology related thing, /friendly_URLs provides semantic information, doesn't it? Which is
totally
good for
exactly
search engines.
Yeah.
So it says a lot about the content, basically. So hopefully the benefits of meaningful URLs are obvious. So let's just look at two tools that I've used to help improve the web addresses on Boagworld. So first thing to say is that most blogging platforms give you a chance to customize the URLs that you're using. So I use Movable Type, but even if you use WordPress, they both allow you to format the addresses, and but they provide some really quite poor defaults, in my opinion. Now, I got attacked a little bit in the comments about this, and some good points were raised. Go and check out the comments in this blog post if you want to know more. But so, for example, Movable Type's default blog posting kind of URL is boagworld.com/year/month/name. All right?
Right.
And Jen, but in my opinion, he says, caveating it after getting some criticism, generally, people are not interested in posts for a specific period. So you don't go to yourself, yes, I want to see everything Paul's written in 2007. What you're interested in instead is, I want to show everything that Paul's written like this on a similar category. You know,
for you, yeah. For some, not. So if it's a kind of diary blog, then
sure. There, you know, there are exceptions to every rule. So therefore I changed the format to be boagworld.com/category rather than year/name.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Of course, you might be working with a technology that doesn't support this kind of customization of URLs. If that's the case, then check out a list apart article called How to Succeed with URLs. Now this is our boagworld.com/links/117/A, because I know how you like me to change it suddenly. And the article provides some very practical approaches about how to kind of go about this with different technologies and different platforms. The other tool that you might want to consider as the ultimate fallback if all else fails is something called Shorty. Now, for some... This link.
Right,
I thought for a minute it was 8, but it's just very small type. And this works very much like Tiny URL, but instead of running it on Tiny URL's domain, you run it on your own. So if you install it on your server, it will take a long URL and shorten it into something more memorable. So, for example, you could take the web address of an article on SitePoint about friendly URLs and reduce it from www.sitepoint.com/blogs/2007/11/05/friendly-urls and reduce all of that to boagworld.com/links/sitepoint. And by the way, that link works.
Ooh.
So you can go try it. This is invaluable for a podcast because it allows me to do all of those addresses that Marcus doesn't like. However, it could also be useful to shorten a URL for key content on your site.
Yeah, right? Definitely.
You know, so if there's, you know, you want to put stuff in a proposal sometimes, you know, you could just put a short, nice URL in there. So hopefully I've convinced you of the value of friendly URLs and provided a couple of good suggestions about how to get started. However, I would love to hear your tips. So, because I don't think I've got this 100% right either. So please go along to the article that I've written in the show notes and stuff, and you can post your comments there. Why are you grinning at me?
The website thingy.
Shut up. I'm having to work really hard on this episode.
Well, I'm twiddling the knobs.
You know, you're not doing anything, and like there's no interview, and I'm having to say a lot, and you'll be mean, and I'll be on a
whining.
Sorry. Let's move on to the review.
World of Boag. World of Boag.
So as I said a moment ago when Marcus told me off for whinging, we haven't got an interview this week. And the reason for that is we want to leave some room for the occasional review and things like that. So we're going to try and do an interview every other week rather than every week. Now, I'm going to do a review this week.
Okay.
Marcus is going to do one next week. I just made that up.
I was like, what?
No, you don't have to. I'm joking. What I really want is people to write in with reviews or perhaps send audio files with reviews.
Okay.
And now I have no idea if this will work because it seems to be like getting blood from a stone trying to get people to send in audio stuff for the podcast.
Yeah.
But I'd really like some reviews of stuff that you think's cool. Now, I'll do the occasional one, but yeah, let's send them in. I'd like to hear from you. And obviously, to send those audio reviews in, you can go along to boagworld.com and you'll see down the right-hand side some information about how you can do that either through Skype or telephone or even via our Contact Us form. It allows you to attach MP3 files. So there you go.
Cool.
So today's review is Woopra.
Yes, I struggled to say that in the intro bit.
I know. I'm not sure I've said it right now. We're really talking about web analytics here and kind of statistics and stuff like that. And I think most of us, when we think of website statistics, think Google Analytics.
Yeah.
It's kind of the default position. It used to be, what was it back in the day? Web Trends, that's it. Everybody just used to go with Web Trends because everybody else went with Web Trends.
Yep.
And then somewhere along the line, it changed to Google Analytics. And I guess the point of this review is to make you really think about should you always go with Google Analytics or are there alternatives out there? I'm not suggesting Woopra is the best of the bunch out there, but it's one that I've been playing with recently. Okay?
Okay.
So let's first of all say a little bit about Woopra and what sets it apart from Google Analytics. And I think the first and probably most important thing to say is it's a desktop application.
Okay.
So it's not online. This is both its blessing and curse. So let's look at blessings first, because I'm a blessing kind of guy.
You are, Paul. It's true.
So one blessing that's provided by it being a desktop application is the ability to stream live results to the application. So you can see users move around the site in real time and watch as they click between pages and get detailed feedback on their location, history, computer configuration, all that kind of stuff. So you can watch them for hours and hours, wasting your life as they move around the site. Now, being able to watch people interact with your site in real time is hugely enlightening in my view, and tells you a lot more than analytics can. Well, it can show you. There's something about watching individuals.
I'm not sure about that. But
I like it, see. I get a lot out of it.
That's just because you're a voyeur.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. I always get it
just hate stats. That's what it is.
It is fascinating seeing people move around the site, but then I start thinking, why did they click away from that quickly? Oh, well, it's probably because it's not designed that well and the usability is poor, but it's actually because the phone rang. Or they, have a cup of tea.
Yeah, fair comment. I'll give you that. I mean, the other thing that's worth saying about Woopra from that point of view, is all of that would be possible using Flash and Ajax. It doesn't need to be a desktop application. Mm. But I'm not aware of any other stats packages that do this. So if you are, please let me know. I'll be interested. So the other benefit of being a desktop application is basically its smoothness and richness of user experience. How arsey does that sound? Basically, it looks nice and it works well. It kind of is constantly updating its animated map, and it's got interactive graphs and charts, and there's something very immediate about the way it works and stuff, rather than click, wait. Mm. Even Ajax isn't quite as smooth, really, as this kind of experience. Not only can you watch users move around the site, it's also, and this is a standout, certainly from Google Analytics, it also allows you to interact with them in much the same way as LivePerson, if you've come across LivePerson, works.
That's really scary, isn't it?
Yeah. So at any point you can select
a user. I'm watching you.
Well, I think there are ways of doing it. At any point, you can select a user who is browsing your site and choose to start a conversation.
Why did you click there?
No. See, now that's the wrong way to do it. But you could say, for example, you could pop up a message that says, if you need help, click here. Right? It doesn't need to say, we're watching you.
In this world of spam and that kind of thing, people are just going to go, shut the browser quickly. Ah!
Well, possibly. But I think this has got real potential. I'm sorry. I do accept what you're saying, but I think that there is a place for it, especially on e-commerce sites where users so easily abandon baskets and things like that.
Yeah. I agree with that.
And being able to provide on-site customer support, it could be hugely beneficial, I think.
I think the way to do it is to say, it's basically tell people there's someone watching them in a correct way, so that it's there. If so, someone suddenly pops up.
I know what you mean. But it kind of depends as well. I think it depends on what that pop-up message says.
Yeah, and what the site is. And I agree with e-commerce sites. Makes lots of sense.
Also, I think, this is something I wrote back in 2004. I wrote about this. And I'm still waiting for people to go, yeah, this is really great. We all should be using it. But actually, I don't think everybody should be using it, as you say. Of course, this could be horribly, horribly abused and be terribly, terribly intrusive. However, take, for example, an elderly audience. I'm thinking of Wiltshire Farm Foods.
Scaring old ladies now.
No, because I don't think they've got the same expectations. I don't think they've got the knowledge that there isn't a nice person at the end. They like the idea of talking to a person rather than the machine.
Yeah, okay.
I think they would appreciate it. I think people with less online experience would appreciate it.
You can have a big exploding animation thing.
It's just causing trouble
like
now.
That.
So anyway, there are my blessings, most of which that Marcus has dissed my blessings. But I did think these were good features, and I do find it very hypnotic watching people move around the site.
All the curses are fantastic. Then.
So basically, whenever you come to the Boag World site, I'm watching you.
He is watching. It's quite scary, isn't it?
And the Headscape site as well. I'm running them on both.
Ooh.
It's really interesting. It's not a lot of good on the Headscape website because it's just one page. So you don't see him do much. But anyway. So curses. Do you want to talk about curses?
Go on then.
Curses. Curse you. So WhoopBrit is not without its problems. It's built with Java. Okay. Right. Now, this should...
Why is that a bad thing?
Well, it should provide cross-platform compatibility and all should be good with the world. However, installation on my Mac was, to say the least, very, very painful and involved using a beta version of Java, which felt dodgy in itself, and fiddling with preference panes and doing all kinds of stuff. Probably would have helped if I'd read the instructions better. I admit that.
If it doesn't install for me, I just don't do it.
Well, exactly. I mean, the fact that I had to fiddle around with that all seemed a bit dumbass, basically. Hopefully it's not as bad for Windows users, because Windows users, not the brightest people.
who else can we offend?
Another problem with WhoopBrit is that there's a waiting list for it. So it's not like a completely closed beta. Anybody can sign up, but you do have to wait a couple of weeks. I think it's because they're trying to be careful about the load on their server.
All right.
So, they're kind of rolling it out gradually. But I got, I just applied like anybody else, and I got an invite in a couple of weeks. So, it's not too bad, but just be aware of that. So is WhoopBrit the perfect analytics tool? Well, probably not, mainly because of Marcus's criticism. However, I have to say at the
That's
minute...
That's the reason why, it's because of me.
Because you say so. At the moment, I've abandoned Google Analytics.
See, I haven't used Google Analytics in anger until last week.
And now you really like it, don't
it's
you?
Fantastic.
I heard you. Yeah. Yeah. They've made it a lot easier. The user interface is much better, I have to say. It's a good tool. I'm not saying it's not a good tool. And I would say in probably majority of cases, Google Analytics is the better tool. But
well,
I'm having
used it, but not like for a proper paid job.
Great. I mean, Wupro does all the analytics that you get pretty much from Google Analytics. So, you know, I do
the overlay thing with the links, like the amount of percentages on the links. I really like that one.
No, they don't do that. I know what you mean.
Then.
Well, there we go. So it's, you know, whatever you choose. But if you fancy playing with something new, then check out Wupro. The moral of this story is don't just go with the herd. Have a look at some different tools out there. And I think that's good advice. You'd agree with
that? That is good advice, yeah.
Okay. Can we move on then as we're now in Unity?
World of Boag. World of Boag.
I'm going to read the questions. Here we are. Creating consistent colours. Anna Jo writes, I know that the colour of a website will look a little different on every monitor, but is there a profile setting that you use as an average setting? Since I work on Mac with a Mac monitor, I'm afraid most people will see something radically different than me. I have read that Mac defaults are brighter than Windows. I'm using a lot of dark colours, so I'm concerned about the site appearing too dark on the majority of computers. I have a list of colour settings provided on my computer. Only one seems to have a Windows-related profile. It's called Nikon Win Monitor, lots of numbers. Do you have any suggestions regarding this issue?
Yes, Anna, I do.
Oh, stop doing that voice.
But first of all, I'd like to complain. I'm fed up. My arm's aching. Why didn't you bring stands? I've got to hold a microphone by my mouth the entire time. You'd think you'd be able to bring a couple of stands up
Why
on a plane
you
with
think
you.
I didn't bring them, Paul.
My arm's aching.
Because they weigh a lot.
Thank you, Anna. That was actually a really interesting
confession. Ooh.
Well, it's because I'm about to make a confession.
Okay.
My confession is, I know nothing about this subject. It's like, this is the problem with having a team of people helping put the podcast together. Ryan selects the questions.
Right.
And he keeps picking ones that I don't know anything about. So I'm having to bluff it. So here we go. This is me bluffing it. So the way that I get around this problem is that I basically look at the design.
It looks nice on my Mac and that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What more do you want? Now, I look at the design on as many different monitors as possible. And to be honest, I did some research so that I could sound intelligent answering this question. And my conclusion is, you should look at it on as many different monitors as possible. Right. Okay. Let's look at the issue and see if we can kind of understand it. So basically, the problem is about gamma settings. Macs by default have gamma correction built in, while PCs do not. So this causes images, especially kind of photographic images, which look great on a Macintosh, to appear too dark on a PC. Now, so how do you solve this? Well, as I said, one approach is to look at on as many different monitors as you can. So look on a TFT monitor, on an old CRT monitor, check on your laptop, check under different operating systems, etc. However, I accept that that's not always quite as easy as it first appears. Mm-hmm. So fortunately, there is a tool for us Mac users to help us experience the horrors that is the PC world. It's called Gamma Toggle and is on link number 7 and can be downloaded for free. Although I believe there is...
I've got to stop you there because I've got to have you or somebody saying... Yeah. Link number 7.
Yeah.
And I'll just drop them in.
That'd be great. Let's do that.
Yeah.
We'll get someone to do it. Who's got that kind of bingo voice. That's what it needs.
Me.
No, we need somebody else other than us. That's a good point. Okay. We'll have to think about that.
Yep.
Actually, there you go. Send them in.
Yeah. Yes.
Send in your best bingo voices. Yeah. Give us 1 to 10.
10.
And A to, I don't know, E. That'll cover it, won't it?
Yeah, I guess.
So we'll go G. Yeah. Anyway, give us a load.
G. Yeah.
Saying link number 1. Yeah. Oh, and it sounds like the post office voice. That's what it is. It's queuing for the post office. Yeah. Cashier number 1. That's it. That's superb. It'll all be great then.
No, you're lost, aren't you?
I am completely lost. Anyway.
No,
I'm pretty much finished.
Okay. Would you like me to read the next question?
Yeah, go on. So, Gamma Toggle. That's what you're looking for, okay. Anna.
Cool. Right, next one. Paul East writes, My girlfriend has come up with a sales idea that would require a simple storefront application with the ability to take credit and debit card payments online. Have you any advice on where to start or any recommendations on storefront applications? We'd like to try and keep startup costs low. We'd like to avoid paying a web designer, sorry, and avoid eBay-type stores if possible for that more professional look. We've done a little investigation on merchant accounts but could do with a good steer on the rest.
Now, Paul, the problem with this
is he knows nothing about this
either.
Well,
I wouldn't do, would I, really? If you think about the e-commerce sites we work on, they're massive, yeah. You know, and involve lots of back-end integration and intelligent people with patches on their elbows talking in rooms together. Or techies, one or the other. Yeah. Or both, maybe. I'm probably not the best person to advise this on this, really. You know, as I said, most of the e-commerce sites I work on are large. I think the best advice I can give you is to check out something called the eBiz video podcast.
Link number 8.
These guys really know their stuff. And we had them on the show, didn't we? Do you remember having them on?
Yes, they were a laugh.
Back in show 55.
How long did it take you to find that?
I did some looking. Okay. So you can do search through show notes if you want to find it. Because we talk about the e-commerce basics there, which might be helpful to you. But these guys do like a week in, week out video podcast. Mm. And they're really good, aren't they? They're very entertaining. They're great guys and they give some really good advice.
Definitely.
Second piece of advice I can give you is I had a little trawl through all my delicious links and see what I could dig up. And I did come up with a couple of simple shopping cart systems that certainly impressed me in the past. The first is Fat Free Cart.
Oh, sorry, link number 9.
Which is a simple system that you can easily integrate into an existing site. So if you've got like a existing blog or something like that, then you can just drop this in, which might be useful if we ever decide to make money out of Boag World, which at the moment we're not doing very well. Well, we are, but, you know, kind of directly.
Stop now. Just stop dithering and move on.
Okay. If you're only selling one or two items, this is kind of perfect, really, I think, as an approach. The alternative is Shopify, which should be
link number 10.
But for some reason isn't at the moment, so we need to correct that before the show goes out.
Oh, okay.
This is it's a kind of little, simple, easy to set up system, but it's quite sophisticated, really. It's more sophisticated, certainly, than Fat Free Cart. So one of those two might do the job, Paul. So there you go. So yes, neither questions today do I know anything about. And so maybe there are people listening that are groaning at my advice saying I'm stupid. That's great. Please let us know. Well, not that just that I'm stupid, but if you've got better suggestions, then go along to the show notes at boagworld.com/podcasts/117 and give us some better advice for you, because I'm very aware that that might not be the best advice this week. So that really almost nearly wraps up the show. But there are a couple of things that I wanted to share before we finish. The first of which is I've been doing some experiments over the last week in my hidden evil lab.
Yeah. Paul's lair.
Yes, I have combined a pony and a, what is it? I'm just trying, there's a great song, Skull Crusher Mountain, and he combines a pony and a monkey because the girl that he fancies likes monkeys and she likes ponies. So
to make a punky. No.
That's quite witty. Well done. I think it was a monkey and a pony. Anyway. So anyway, I've been experimenting with Ustream.tv.
Alchemy.
Yes. So I'm looking at the possibility of streaming the show live, but not just in plain old audio, but actually setting up a camera so you can watch us sit here being rude to one another.
Mm.
Maybe not in a hotel room.
I don't think we'd do it in a hotel room.
No, it'll be in a boring office. I want a studio. Can we have a studio? Like with lights and cameras and a director.
Yes, of course, Paul.
Make it happen.
Consider it done.
Okay, so we did a couple of experiments over the last couple of weeks where I just suddenly on Twitter said, come join me. And we have 41 people, which is a bit of a bargain, really, I think, for a 15 minutes notice.
Mm.
So we're gonna do it proper in anger for the first time next week. So we're going to be recording on the 20th, which is the Tuesday, next Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I'm going to say 10 to 10:30 kind of round about then kickoff time, probably nearer 10:30 because Marcus is always late into the office. I will give you a bit of advance notice on Twitter and also on the Boag World website. You can
join 10 to 10:30 GMT.
Well, well, we're British summertime at the minute, so it's slightly...
Yeah, GMT plus one. Yeah. But then everyone else is plus one, so...
What? Yeah, well, yeah. So, yes, basically, check us out at boagworld.com/live is where you can get, and you can see the video stream. There's a chat room as well, so you'll be able to put in chat comments and correct me in real time when I talk bollocks on the show, in preference to on the show notes afterwards. So, check that out. I think that'll be fun. I'm really quite excited about that.
It's going to be a huge, massive overload, isn't there? This will be great.
It's not. We're not that popular. It's not going to be like thousands of people or anything. Hopefully there won't be too many, because I know when Leo Laporte does this, who is a big name podcaster, he gets like 1,000 people in the chat room. And it's like the chat's going fast, so fast by that you can't read any of it. But hopefully it won't be like that, because we're not that popular.
No.
So come along, join in with
what
that.
I was thinking, sorry.
Oh, what kind of overload were you thinking?
What, thousands, obviously.
No, you were thinking another form of... Oh, okay. So anyway, that should be fun. Really looking forward to that. And we'll hang around a bit afterwards as well and have just a bit of a general chat. And you'll get to see quite how unprofessionally put together the show is, because you'll get all the bits in
between. People know that, don't you?
I think they're aware
of how unprofessional this is.
Now, to finish off with, we're not going to have a joke from Marcus this week, because we've got something far, far funnier for you. It's a slightly desperate voicemail message that we received from Ed.
Paul, it's 11:15 on a Friday night, and I've been searching for this URL, the secret link thing. You say it's simple, but it's obviously too simple for me. Please, could you just say it on the next show or something, please, because this is getting quite frustrating. And I just want to go to sleep now. I don't want to go to sleep till I found it. And I will think I will have to, because I just can't see it. Please help. Please.
Oh. So Ed is a long-time listener. He was listening to the show since right at the beginning, and is a personal friend as well. And I feel, you know, what? I was gonna announce this week what the hidden page was, but I've almost now tempted not to, just to prolong his agony. Ed, I'm so sorry for causing you such heartache. Go along to boagworld.com/stalking. And you can find the anticlimax that is the hidden page. It really isn't that good, mate. It wasn't worth wrecking your life over. So there you go. That's Boag World Show 117, available at boagworld.com/podcast/117. Thanks so much for listening, and join us for our first live show next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hello, world of Boag.
Being on David Letterman.
Boag World! Boag World!